Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
When you're down and trouble.
We're back. It's 12 after. 800-531-3815. Toll free coast to coast. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. This is our FedWatch show. We're going to talk about the economy. We're going to talk about what the Federal Open Market Committee is going to be talking about next week and in a few days, and what they're going to, and we're going to predict what they're going to decide to do. That's what we do here on the show. And the two guys that I've asked to join me to talk about this are two of our top economists in our brain trust, Ray Keating, chief economist with the Small Business Survival Committee. Ray, welcome to the show.
Hey, Jim. How are you?
Good to have you back. We're doing great. Good to have you back on the show. And Richard DeKayser, who is chief economist with National City Bank. Richard, welcome back.
Always good to be here, Jim.
Good to be back. Say hello to Ray.
Good morning, Ray.
Morning, Richard. How are you?
Okay, thanks.
Okay, let's get started. Ray, I want you to, as we normally do on this show, and I hate to use the word normal in anything we do on the show, but as we typically do, Ray, both of you know the drill. We've done this. You've done this before. I'd like, Ray, for you to start and give us your thoughts on where the economy is based on the fundamentals.
Well, as you know, we've basically had a tough time of it, I think, since the middle of 2000. The economy started to slow down then. Obviously, we've gone into recession. And now the question is, how's the recovery been? And when you look at the average growth rate, it's, and compared to other recoveries, it's been underperforming. So that's the problem we've been facing. Obviously, the politicians, as the presidential race starts to heat up, are making a big deal about the issue of job creation, and that certainly has been rather lackluster, to be, I think that's probably being a bit generous, but I think things are, you know, starting to, I think we're starting to turn the corner here. Second quarter GDP number was, I think, 3.1% growth. That's certainly hopeful, and I think the tax cut this year was very pro-growth oriented in key areas in terms of personal income tax rates, capital gains tax rates, dividend taxes. So I think those are that tax cut was a big plus for the economy. And the Wall Street Journal this morning has very buoyant predictions from economists. I believe the prediction is for 4.7% growth in the third quarter, and I think right around 4% for the fourth quarter. So that's certainly where we need to be and where we should be in an economic recovery. So I think we're poised to hopefully kick this economy into gear.
Well, good job, Ray. And Richard, Ray's just a little Pollyanna there, isn't he?
Well, I'll put that in perspective. I'm one of the 54 names in the Wall Street Journal's report today, and I'm even about a point over the consensus estimate for third quarter growth. I think we should easily put a 5 handle on the growth figure when it's released a couple of months from now. And
a 5 handle for what period?
Oh, that's for the third quarter, the quarter we're occupying right now.
Wow.
And Ray's points about the sluggishness of the recovery to date are all extremely valid. I guess I look at the donut more than the hole. However, when you look at what we've been through over the past 2.5 years with rapidly deflating stock market bubbles, corporate governance scandals, two wars, and a terrorist attack, it's, I think, pretty impressive that we've come through this with both the mildest recession ever in U.S. history and growth, even as respectable as it's been, at a 2%, or as disappointing as it's been, at a 2% pace. Now, I've emphasized tremendously over about the past year the role of uncertainty in holding back business spending and hiring and giving us the so-called soft patch, as the Federal Reserve has described it, but that's behind us now. The war is over, not to say that there aren't still problems in the Middle East, to be sure there are, but as those uncertainties have faded, we've seen things come back very, very swiftly. Basically, the GDP numbers over the first three quarters of this year go 1.4, 3.1, and if you like the consensus, 4.7. If you like my numbers, 5.4. So the trajectory is very impressive, and I think we're at a point in the business cycle, which I'd encourage your listeners to recognize as the start of a expansion that's going to probably kick in with real verve for the next 2 years at least.
Okay, well, I tell you, I agree with you, and as they say, from your mouth to God's ears. Ray, one of the things that and I want both of you to address this question. It seems to me that I've been an amateur Fed watcher for many years. I've got William Grider's Secrets of the Temple book on my shelf. I'm looking at it right now. That was back in the mid '80s. I was reading that book, and which tells you I don't have a life. But I've been more and more serious amateur observer of the Fed over the last 6 or 7 years since I've been doing the show, and it seems to me that in the late '90s. That the Fed, one of the problems we had in our economy was that the Fed didn't believe in our own economy. They didn't actually believe what they were seeing. What they thought they saw, apparently, especially in '99, as I remember, what they thought they saw was something that was just too good to be true. The productivity, of course, some of it was too good to be true because we now know about Enron and Wharton. But basically, a lot of the numbers that we're believing right now. The Fed, they were there in the late '90s, and the Fed wasn't believing them. Do you think that they believe now?
Well, it's an interesting point. You know, I've been, as I've said on your show before, I think there are different Greenspans that we've dealt with. I think you had the good Greenspan, who was the guy that I think followed markets and did a wonderful job up until about the late 1990s. And then you had the Greenspan that I wasn't too keen about, that I think you're talking about, in terms of the Fed started to get nervous. I think they started to fall into their Phillips curve mentality, which basically says there's a trade-off between economic growth or employment and inflation. So I think they started to get, you know, that little nervous Nelly thing going on, and they, from mid-1999 into the middle of 2000, they hiked interest rates dramatically and
six times.
Had a big role in,
six or eight
in,
times,
in shooting down the economy. So, I think... so we've gone through these various stages. I'm hoping that we have the good Greenspan back now. I mean, you keep rent rates back down, and the economy's starting to pick up. You had mentioned earlier about should we pay much attention to the Fed, or maybe you asked this off air, but any more of that type of thing? Well, you know, we tend to pay attention to the Fed, I think, more when they mess things up. And, if they're doing a fairly good job, which I think they're back on track now, and we probably aren't taking much notice of them. And that's
a good thing. Stand by, guys. When we come back, Richard, I want you to pick up on that question, too, because I do think it's an important one, and I'd like to know your comments. Quick break, folks. It's 20 after. We'll be right back with Ray Keating and Richard DeKayser. This is our FedWatch show. Stay with us.
Can you?
Back, it's 23 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. My website is www.jbsba.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter. It comes every week by email. And if you decide you don't like it, I'll give you all your money back. We'll take you off our list, I promise. But you can join the over 10,000 subscribers to my list who get my newsletter every week. And this week's feature article is titled Professional Vitamin C. So check that out when you get a chance. Ray Keating is our guest, along with Richard DeKayser. And Richard, I just asked Ray the question about which Greenspan was going to show up these days. But primarily, do we think that the Fed actually now believes the economy that we have, that it is possible to grow? Do they believe the productivity numbers are real? I'm sure they didn't believe that in the late 1990s. I think, as I remember, they basically said they didn't believe it. They demonstrated that with their vote to increase interest rates a number of times and really slow the economy down. And so now that we've got some history behind us, and that we've got these numbers that you're telling us that we're going to have, which I certainly like, and I hope they're true. Do you think that the Fed will look at those numbers and say, whoa, this is the economy's going to get overheated? We better raise interest rates, or we'll have inflation.
No, I don't think that concern's on their radar screen at all. In fact, I think the Fed has become a believer and even advocate of the notion that the U.S. economy is experiencing steadily higher rates in labor productivity, which in turn allow the economy to grow faster without inflation becoming a problem. For evidence of that, you don't have to look any further than the statements that they issue after their 6 or 7 week periodic meetings. One of the in those statements, they give us about three sentences wherein they summarize their perspective on the economy. And a staple of those statements over the past couple of years has been some reference to something along the lines of still strong productivity growth, underlying productivity growth. So I think they've bought into the notion, and any skepticism they have may have expressed in the past was really of a transitory nature. So, for example, we saw some particular quarterly numbers that would be absolutely stratospheric, and the Fed would say something like, this doesn't seem plausible. And frankly, when they said that, they were proven right, because these numbers that we're all scrutinizing day in and day out, they're guesstimates, and they change the further you get away from them and the more information comes into line. And one of the things, frankly, that did happen in the late 1990s is that the truly unusual strong productivity growth numbers that were being printed, they did get shaved down. The government revised its output measures. They revised them downwards. Productivity was less exuberant, though truly still strong. So I think they've been a believer really from the start, and when they've expressed any doubts, it's really been more of a quibble than a fundamental disagreement.
Right. Ray, one of the things that that I think makes them believers right now is when we were calling them unbelievers three or four years ago, we were sitting at basically full employment. And so, the three of us were even giving them the nod toward believing that inflation might pick up because of wages and the unemployment situation. But now we're sitting here on this kind of growth potential.
Oh, don't put me in that group. I wasn't giving them the nod on that.
Okay, I did it. But the thing is,
I was there too.
The thing is, though, is that that now with this kind of growth numbers that we're thinking will happen, but yet we still got really high unemployment. I mean, that ought to prove to them that the productivity numbers are real. But isn't that going to be the next indicator of inflation? Not so much the growth, but when unemployment goes down and we get folks back to work.
No, I don't think. I think that's the Phillips curve thinking. I think, you know, you fall into the trap.
I've gone over to the dark side. Is that what you're saying?
You've gone over to the dark side. you know, I think it's very dangerous to start to go down the path of, you know.
But I guess what I meant was, isn't that what we need to watch for with the Fed when employment comes back? That's the danger that when we have our Fed watch shows. The next time that unemployment gets below 5%, isn't that when we need to start worrying about that?
Yes, you're back into the light now.
I'm sorry, no, I took a pill.
I think that is something you have to keep an eye on with the Fed. You're absolutely right. And right now, you know, everybody's concerned about getting the economy rolling and jobs created, so that's not an issue right now. And I've said, you know, I've said on this show and I've written it many times that, you know, when you have to start worrying about the Fed is when things get rolling and get good. And, you know, the old line about they want to take the punch bowl away. So, you know, I think right now the Fed is, you know, got its mindset on helping to get the economy moving, and, you know, so they're not going to do anything stupid in terms of policy changes. So I don't think we have to worry about that for quite some time, actually. At the very least, you know, we're sitting here in September 2003. There is no way that the Fed is going to do anything of an anti-growth nature before November 2004, that's for sure. I don't think they're gonna dabble around and try to do anything like that, obviously, before the next election.
Well, I'll take the other side of that.
You got 20 seconds to do it.
Okay. Very quickly, the model the Fed's working with is fundamentally if supply is in excess of demand, that is, there's slack in the economy, they want growth to accelerate and above its long-term potential. So we've got high unemployment now, low factory utilization. That's why they've put interest rates at the lowest levels in our adult lifetimes. And they're not going to touch it, I absolutely agree, until you see that being realized, that is, all that slack being taken up. But I think that evidence is going to be in hand well before the election season. So, and they're going to want to stay in front of it.
Hearing Richards talk about that, folks, give us that brilliant example, is why there are bank groupies. Now you know why, ladies and gentlemen, there are bank groupies. They love that kind of talk. 29 after, we're going to take a quick break right back with Richard DeCaser and Ray Keating. This show is brought to you by IBM. Office Depot.
Now back to ringside with the voice of small business and the champion of the entrepreneur.
Say it now, gentlemen. Undisputed heavyweight champion of the world.
The small business advocate, Jim Blasingame.
We're back. It's 34 after. Thank you very much for hanging around with me. 800-531-3815, toll-free coast to coast. We're visiting with our good friends Ray Keating and Richard DeKayser. Ray is with the chief economist with the Small Business Survival Committee, an organization that pound for pound does more for small business than any other organization in the world. And I'm very happy to be a strong supporter of theirs, as well as Richard DeKayser, who's chief economist with one of the prominent regional bank organizations in the nation, the National City Bank organization. Richard, you got about 1,300 branches around the Midwest?
That's right. About 1,300 branches, 2,000 ATMs, and the largest SBA lender in most of the Midwest.
Yeah, congratulations. A big hand for you on that. And by the way, I encourage you to hurry up and get more than 1,300 branches. You know, that's a little bit of an unlucky number. Maybe we need to add the ATMs in there and call it 1,500. What do you think?
We're working on it.
And Ray Keating is with Small Business Survival Committee, as I said. Ray, why don't you give us your website and tell us a little bit about the SBSC?
Oh, sure. www.sbsc.org. And we work on every possible policy issue that impacts the small business community, or at least almost everyone. And our website's updated on a regular basis, almost daily. We've got regular columns, facts of the week, reports, studies. Next week, just to tease people a little bit, we'll come out with our annual Small Business Survival Index, where we rank the states for their policy environment with entrepreneurship. So that'll be out next week.
You're going to have to. We're going to have to get you back on the show to do that coverage too, because as we've done, as you know, many times. The other thing I like about their website, folks, is you can go there and find out how your congressman or woman or senator and senators voted on small business issues. You can find that out in their indexes there as well on how they did. So check that out when you get a chance. And that's at sbsc.org. Okay, let's talk about the deficit. Richard, I'm going to let you go first. Since I had to cut you off a little bit earlier last time, the deficit, the numbers look like they're getting pretty high. They look like they're as far as the eye can see. And a lot of people are wringing their hands over the deficit. Should we be?
Yeah, I think we should. I think there is a problem. But let me start off by distinguishing between what economists call cyclical deficits and structural deficits. Cyclical deficits are what happens when the economy goes into a nosedive. And there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, on the contrary, they're very desirable. Let's people keep more of their money, spend it, helps the economy from sinking even further. Structural deficits, however, are a terrible problem, and it looks like that's what we now have. That is to say, if you have a deficit even after the economy has grown to what many people consider full employment, and you have persistent deficits, that's a problem for the economy because it does mean the government's in there competing with the private sector for money. It does mean that real interest rates will tend to rise, and with real interest rates high, people will invest less, productivity growth will slow, and so forth. So it's not too late. Things can be done to try and prevent this, but as things stand right now, we do have a structural budget deficit, and it's large, and it's not going away unless something is done.
Well, so much for our Pollyanna atmosphere. Ray, what do you think?
Well, I think with the deficit, I've never been all that concerned about deficits and their impact on interest rates. When I'm looking at the numbers, I don't see the link. But and that doesn't surprise me in terms of, you know, the amount of capital that's washing around the world and the size of the U.S. federal budget deficit. But I have never been too concerned from that perspective. My concern is what's underlying it, as Richard said. You know, we've got an economic slowdown. We actually have a historic drop in terms of federal tax revenues declining 3 years in a row. When this current fiscal year closes out, it'll be a three-year drop. And I look back over the last century, and that has never occurred 3 years in a row, which I think is kind of interesting. So that's part of the issue. But I think the bigger problem in terms of the deficit is that spending at the federal government is just skyrocketing. And even if you factor out defense spending, I certainly can understand, obviously, in the current environment, increases in defense spending, non-defense spending is going through the roof. And, spending on non-defense programs is rapidly rising at about, I think, think this year, I think the rate is around 8%. Now, that's a, you know, that's roughly four times the rate of inflation. And we have Republicans in control of Congress and a Republican in the White House. So this is now the era of big government, and this concerns me enormously. So I think, you know, in terms of the deficit being a signal that federal spending is out of control, I think it's a major problem.
But, Richard, you're telling us that the economy is getting ready to get shift into high gear, and we all know that when the United States economy shifts into high gear, it has the ability to produce a tremendous amount of production, and therefore income, and therefore income taxes.
Absolutely.
And we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to ask you how you reconcile the negative news about the deficit, but also the ability of this country to generate revenue. I think we've seen it in the past, and we'll talk about that right after these messages. It's 20 after. I'm sorry, 20 till. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Let me remind you, coming up in the hour straight ahead, Maria Erickson is a new friend, and she'll be with us to talk to us about her company. She's an entrepreneur that's been recognized by Office Depot as doing an outstanding job with her business, and we're going to get her to tell us about that. And then after Maria, we're going to be visiting with another old friend, Melanie Sablehouse, who's the Deputy Administrator of the SBA. And as you know, I'm going to be in Washington, D.C. next week. My annual pilgrimage to Washington, D.C. for the Small Business Week festivities. I'm going to be broadcasting from four different venues, including 2 days at the SBA. That'll be next Thursday and Friday. I'm looking forward to that. We're going to have a lot of fun. And Melanie Sablehouse will be there, and she's going to join us today to talk to us about that. Let's get back to our guests, Richard DeKayser and Ray Keating. Richard, I had asked you the question when we took the break of how you reconcile your growth numbers that you're predicting, which is 4% or more for 2004, but yet you're saying that we've got this structural deficit situation going on. Isn't the ability of the American economy to grow and to produce and to earn income and to be taxed on that income, isn't that going to solve our deficit problems?
You're half right. It's going to help our deficit problem, and it'll help it a lot, which is why I don't think the deficit's going to remain in the territory of the $450 to $500 billion range that we're likely to see in the next fiscal year. I think strong growth will help chip away at that and bring it down, but not bring it down to zero and certainly not put it back into the black. Now, that's as things stand now. Now, I think it's important to recognize that there's also a lot of things that can happen in the interim, and when the government agency most responsible for putting out budget projections does so, as they most recently did just a month ago, they also include a list of things that could make it turn for the better or things that could make it turn for the worse. And these are very realistic things like alternative minimum tax adjustments that are all on the horizon. And if you look at those foreseeable things, the downside risks outside the upside risks, 2 to 1. So even their assumptions, which have things like tax expirations in 2011 that no one realistically thinks are going to happen,
mm-hmm.
The risk is that even if you get a strong economy, not the risk, but high probability, is that even if you get a strong economy coming back in 2004, 5, and beyond, it still ain't going to be enough to make the deficit go down to zero. And again, we've got a particular problem. It's about 10 years out. It's the baby boomers. We're supposed to be running a surplus in the Social Security Trust Fund right now. We're not. We're using that money to pay for everything from wars in the Middle East to beefing up the Securities and Exchange Commission, and it looks increasingly going forward like improving our electrical grid. So there's just too many needs out there that people perceive to have a legitimate claim on the taxpayers' dollars make the numbers work, even in a strong economy.
But, Ray, I hear what Richard's saying, but it seems to me that a lot of people were beating up on Ronald Reagan back in the 80s about the deficits, and all it took was a ginning U.S. economy to solve that problem, which Bill Clinton got the credit for. And, I mean, isn't it quite possible that we could be in for another long-term expansion starting right now?
Well, I think that the economy, in terms of economic growth, I think we're poised to start bouncing back, as I said earlier, and possibly get on a nice long-term growth track. So,
but how long would it take us? How long would it take us to overcome the deficit?
Well, you know what? That lies, in my my view on the spending side of the equation.
Yeah.
And, you know, our politicians, you know, that's a question for politicians. I don't think it's anything is etched in stone. It's based on the decisions made by our elected officials. And if they want to continue with the spending spree that we've seen during, quite frankly, the Bush years, then we're going to face these huge deficits. If they, all they need is a, you know, they don't even have to cut spending. I'd love to see them cut spending, but
yeah.
they don't even have to do that.
All they have to do is
get some sort of, you know, reasonable control on the rate of increase.
Right.
And you combine that with economic growth, and you'll see the deficit eventually whittle away and eventually die. But, you know, to ask politicians to keep spending under control, you know, you talk about Medicare. You know, we talked about Social Security. What about Medicare? Medicare is a program that the costs are careening out of control now. So what is everybody in Washington doing? They're trying to figure out how they can expand the program.
Yeah, yeah. Richard,
this does not give me confidence that these guys are serious about, you know, the spending side of the equation.
Richard, go ahead.
Jim, yeah, I got to weigh in on this, Jim. I agree with Ray's point that it is spending that's now absolutely out of control, and I've never seen such a lack of discipline as long as I've been watching the economy. However, I have to fundamentally disagree with your assessment of what happened in the 1980s because, in fact, the economy did have
about my assessment.
Well, yeah. I mean, we did have a tremendous growth record, second longest expansion in its day ever recorded. But we never got the deficit under control, and it was certainly not increasing tax revenues that did so during that period of time. The two reasons that the deficit shrunk and then became a surplus was because we had two substantial tax increases, first under George Bush the First,
right,
and second under Bill Clinton, and it was those actions that finally got us back in control. Now, with respect to Ray's point on spending, you know, again, it's out of control, but it seems that the only time we ever get spending under control is in a moment of crisis or perceived crisis.
Or when we have a surplus.
Because they
weren't spending money like they are now when we had the surplus.
Well, it's the other way around. We had the surplus because they weren't spending the money.
Yeah, yeah.
But once the surplus was apparent, the floodgates opened because people saw that as a ripe opportunity to favor their constituencies.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that spending will ultimately be taken under control. I think taxes also will be increased. But for the near term, we're looking at probably two or more years of serious deficit problems before we get back into the kind of mentality that motivated George Bush the First to try and get things under control as he did during his administration.
Stand by, guys. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, folks, we're going to have our prediction. What's the Fed going to do when they meet next time and next Tuesday? And we're going to find out, is there going to be any help coming from across the pond from any countries to the global economy? We're going to do that right after these messages. It's 10 till. Stay with us. We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we've been having a great visit with our good friends Ray Keating, Chief Economist with the Small Business Survival Committee, and that's sbsc.org, an organization I certainly, wholeheartedly, and without reservation recommend that you check out and that you support them whenever you can, because they do more for small business pound for pound than any other organization that I know of in the world. And then, and also Richard DeKayser, who's Chief Economist and Vice President, Senior Vice President with American City Bank, and National City Bank. Sorry about that, Richard.
That's
National
right.
City, National City Bank, and give us that website, Richard.
Easy as pie. Nationalcity.com.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, it's time for our predictions. And just so that you guys, you know, everybody knows that I'm the amateur here, and these other two guys are the professionals. I'm actually the dangerous amateur. I'm going to go ahead so nobody thinks that I'll be swayed by them, because as Ray and Richard both know, I'm frequently wrong but never in doubt. And and so I'm going to say that the Fed is not going to do a darn thing with the interest rates this time. And Ray, I'm going to let you go next.
You are the sage, my friend. I think you're absolutely right.
I've lurched uncontrollably to the truth. Is that what you're saying?
I think they're going to stand pat, and I think that's probably wise. And let's see, you know, let's make sure the economy is picking up, and hopefully these pro-growth tax cuts that I talked about will help move things along. But I think the Fed will stand pat for now.
Richard?
Absolutely agree. Bottom line is the unemployment rate's too high. factories aren't operating where they should be. There's generally slack throughout the economy, and they don't want that to happen. They're going to keep rates as low as possible until they start seeing that situation change.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think actually the interesting thing is that, as I mentioned a moment ago, they do put out little statements as to their take on the economy, and I think everyone agrees that there's going to be no action taken next week, but where the action really is how they spin their interpretation of the economy. And what's been said from them in recent months is that the risk of deflation exceeds the risk of inflation accelerating.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're probably going to back away from that. Not that they're going to see inflation accelerating, but they're going to take a so-called neutral position, which is to say that deflation is no longer going to be a superior risk in their view of things.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's right.
Okay, I wanted to get into a discussion about some foreign markets, but actually we're not going to have time to get into too much of that right now. But I would like to talk about a little bit about trade. Are we going to is trade with other countries going to pick up a little bit in general, rather than any specific countries? Ray, is trade going to pick up a little bit to help us out?
Well, let's hope so. I mean, I haven't had a chance to look at growth rates elsewhere. I know there was an article yesterday, the day before, saying that Japan's economy was picking up, and that's certainly a good thing after the long hole they've been in.
Yeah.
I think we're the leader here in the global economy, and once we get rolling, we tend to bring others along with us. But obviously, growth elsewhere helps us as well in terms of our exports.
Right.
So we need flourishing trade, and you know what? On the policy front, the previous president, Clinton, was good on trade for the most part, and the current president is good on trade.
Mm-hmm.
So I think trade is one of the real bright spots on the policy.
Richard, I got about 45 seconds. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think Ray's got it right. I mean, if you want to distill it down to its essence, U.S. trade performance rests on two things, the exchange rate and the rest of the world's growth. The exchange rate's been swinging to our advantage over the past year and a half, not hugely, but incrementally.
For our exports, right?
That's right. The competitiveness of our goods overseas has been improving. But unfortunately, the growth picture is going the other way. That is to say, we're growing faster than they are. We're the train that's pulling we're the engine that's pulling the train. And that may change in time. That is, the rest of the world may catch up with us, which would give us an overall improving trade picture. But for the moment, it's kind of a split decision.
Is China, I look to China to be the next bright spot in terms of the economy, of course, but with it, with their bright spot is going to come some negatives too, isn't it, right?
Boy, that China is you're opening up a can of worms to the end of the show here. So.
We'll have to have that discussion another time, because you're right. I've done that right up on the end of the hour. Let me stop right now and thank both of you for being here. Ray Keating with Small Business Survival Committee. Good job today. Thank you for helping us have our FedWatch show today. Ray, Richard DeKaiser with National City Bank, thank you as well. It's always a pleasure to have both of you on the show.
That was fun. Thanks.
Bye, guys. We'll see you later. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest entrepreneurial country in the world. And remember, when opportunity knocks, it doesn't know you've had a bad day. Greet it with a smile. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. This program is for you. I'll be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.